It is only natural to be concerned for your kids' safety and security. It's a basic part of parenting, and it is a parent's greatest fear that their child will suddenly vanish. That is the turf of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It's been tracking incidents and offering prevention advice for decades now, and a representative visits Medford for a free session on prevention and security tonight at 5:30 at the main library in Medford. Jerise Colon is Executive Director of Outreach for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and our guest on the phone. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, NCMEC, which I assume is what you call yourselves, I don't know, formed for some specific reasons. Tell us what those were.
Sure. Back in 1984, many of us remember when Adam Walsh went missing, and his parents, John and Reve Walsh, came to the Washington area trying to find a way to help their son. And to get some resolve and some closure. And they realized very quickly that there really wasn't a place that centralized missing children's information, and it was really kind of scattered. And so they worked very hard with Congress to put some laws on the books and to help form the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And so now it's a central repository for information regarding missing children. We deal quite a bit with child sexual exploitation issues such as child pornography and online enticement, and really trying to make sure that parents and communities, one, know where to report missing children, but also to find help to prevent those things from happening as well.
What kinds of information, Jerise, were not centrally collected at the time when your efforts started?
So, missing children information really, missing children in general really wasn't a common occurrence. And so a lot of law enforcement handled that separately. You could enter in missing information for a horse, a missing car, but no one really captured that information. So if I had a child that was missing from Florida, if I was in Virginia or if I was in Maryland or Oregon, nobody would know unless I contacted that law enforcement department directly. So now we've really created a system in which law enforcement agencies can connect with one another should there be a missing child that may have gone from state to state. The FBI now captures that information, and so we've come a long way. It's been a long 30 years, but we've definitely come a long way in trying to capture the information and making it easier for law enforcement to help recover children.
Has it been slow and steady progress, or were there some great gains over the years in getting legislation and procedural changes?
We've had some great gains. Of course, it's been like ebbs and flows. In the very beginning, it was very powerful because nothing like this has existed. But over the last 30 years, because of our mission has expanded, we've gotten a lot of legislation passed. For instance, September 30th of this year actually marks the time in which every state in the United States is required to report children who are missing from care. And that was something that we've been lobbying for quite some time, because children who are in foster care or in group homes sometimes get lost. And lost in a system that doesn't necessarily protect them. And so all states now are required to notify us when children are missing from care so we can quickly get into action and help recover those children as well.
What can the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children do, for example, though, in a case where a child goes missing from foster care? And doesn't it seem weird that that's only reported once a year?
No, not once a year. Mm-hmm. So when a child goes missing, they're required to report to us.
Okay.
But that wasn't a law prior to 2 years ago.
Ah.
And so that law went into effect this year. So if the moment a child is missing from foster care, they're required to do so. And a lot of states had other things in place. So they may have had to report to local law enforcement. But having to report to the National Center steps it up, and then we're able to provide resources to the family, to child protective services, such as, search services. So if the posters that you've seen, have you seen me, any sort of search efforts and analytical work that we can provide through social media or through other means is provided to them as well.
How has the mission of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children adjusted over the years to the issues it faces and to the types of issues that the kids are faced with?
Well, the Internet, the advent of the Internet really helped propel our mission and really expanded our role when it comes to protecting children. In 1984, the Internet really didn't exist for families, and so it wasn't as easily accessible as it is today. And so some of the issues that we're facing now, particularly with online enticement or child pornography or online solicitation, those are types of things that we now focus on. The National Center has a cyber tip line where you can report any instance of child child sex exploitation. ISPs are also required to report there. And so when there's an issue, we can, again, work with the appropriate law enforcement to kind of get information and reports out so they can investigate on their side. But it's also helped us to develop some really quality prevention education programs, particularly around online safety, because, again, that's something that has not that did not exist in 30 years ago, and we have to continue to evolve to make sure that our children are safe.
That's a really interesting wrinkle you just pointed out, though. You said ISPs. I mean, internet service providers are required. They're essentially acting like mandatory reporters.
Absolutely. When it comes to child sex exploitation, specifically child pornography, if they come across those items, they send those to our cyber tip line, and then we work with federal law enforcement to so they can investigate.
Jerese Colon is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Executive Director of Outreach for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. A representative of that organization will be in the Rogue Valley tonight at 5:30, speaking at the Medford Library large conference room about internet and personal safety for children and teens. You can join us now on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, thoughts about missing children and exploitation of children and teens. Welcome here at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. When I think back to some of the things that were said at the time, around the time the center was started, big concern about stranger abduction. That's really not the largest part of it by this point. I mean, what is the incidence of stranger abduction versus at least some level of acquaintance?
Well, there are over 400,000 children are reported missing to the FBI every year, and a large majority of those children are going to be runaways or family abductions. So they're not going to be the typical stranger abduction that I think people think about when they think about missing children. It's a very small portion. However, it is still very important for parents to understand some of the risks that are involved to make sure their kids are safe, because what we have seen is an increase in attempted abductions. And so the National Center has been collecting data on attempted abductions now for the past 10 years to understand how these things are happening, what types of lures are being used, what types of tricks are being used on kids to help parents better protect their kids when it comes to abduction.
Well, in that particular category, attempted abductions, though, I mean, is that a consistently reported issue within police departments? I wonder how you're obtaining the information and if it required legislation to make it available to you.
It's actually very difficult to capture because it is not required. And so we work with local law enforcement to kind of get that information. And, you know, it would be a lot easier if law enforcement was required, if there was a law in the book to report that. Because what we found is that when you start looking at the trends when it comes to attempted abductions, a lot of abductors will try and try and try and fail. But eventually, they may actually abduct the child and harm a child. And so we want to make sure that when we see those trends, we can notify law enforcement. We can notify the public that, you know, this is what's happening so they know what to look out for. But it is rather difficult when you're not required to submit that information. And so we have a team of analysts who their whole job is to look for incidents of attempted abduction, whether that is in news and then confirming with law enforcement or going to law enforcement directly.
And so are we talking about in-person sorts of attempts at abduction, like, you know, come here, I need to talk to you, or, you know, I got a puppy down or anything like that?
Yeah, the puppy trick, the I'll give you $5 trick, your mom sent me to pick you up trick. All of those things are kind of captured in that category.
So what are the most common ones? I mean, when you give advice about things for parents to watch out for, what are the things you have to tell them to tell the kids?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate, but they're using the same tricks that they used 30 years ago. So it's the puppy, it's the money, I need help finding something, your mom told me to come pick you up. So all of those are still the main lures that are getting kids when we are looking at these attempted abductions. So it's really important that parents not scare their kids, but talk to them about that this may happen. And if it does happen, if someone does try to get you to go with them or to help find a puppy, that, one, adults shouldn't need help from children, so they shouldn't be asking you in the first place, but to also have those open conversations with kids about what to do. And, you know, the majority of the kids that were approached, they got away because they did something proactive. So either they walked away, they ran away, they screamed, they shouted, someone got involved. And so it's really important that, you know, parents are having those conversations. So if something does happen, kids know how to get away.
Give us a sense of numbers now, Jerese, between attempted abductions like we're talking about here in person versus attempted contacts with children via the internet. I imagine the internet is vastly outnumbering the in-person kinds.
Well, there's really no comparison. I mean, we've looked at about 10,000 reports over the last 10 years that have attempted abductions, and we got last year over 4 million reports of child sexual exploitation via our cyber tip line. Now, that includes online solicitation, includes child pornography, but the numbers are no way, there's no comparison. One, that's because, you know, again, people are required to report, and it's easy to report through our website. Attempted abduction is a little more tricky as far as reporting goes.
We're talking to Jerise Colon, the Executive Director of Outreach for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about not only some of the facts and figures of missing and exploited children, but ways to consider safety and prevention. Another member of the National Center will be at the Public Library in Medford tonight. That's Morgan Davison talking about the Internet and personal safety for children and teens. That's at 5:30, free to the public, at the large group room at the Medford Library. You can join us now at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So what are some of the cyber safety warnings that you give out? What are the things that parents should be telling kids to keep their eyes on and keep their eyes completely off of, for that matter?
Well, as technology grows, it's really important that parents talk to their kids about the technology that they're placing in their hands and about what types of things they're doing with that technology. So if you're going to hand your child a smartphone, understand what the capabilities are, knowing that even if you don't have internet access in your home, if you need a Wi-Fi connection, that those are plentiful. And so thinking that, you know, handing over maybe an iPod Touch because it doesn't have phone capabilities doesn't mean that your kids can't get online. So understanding what the devices do, I think, is first and foremost the most important. Also understanding where children are, whether they're using social media, depending on their age, who they may be talking to, what friends they may have, getting to know where they're going and who they're talking to, just as you would if they were in person. So I remember, you know, my mother never let me spend the night over to someone's house unless she met them in person. You know, that's kind of gone away a little bit because the way that we meet people is so much different. But I tell parents to kind of think about that time when they're talking to their kids about, you know, allowing them to either meet people online or talk to people online, get to know who those friends are. And some of them may be friends you met at school or at church or wherever you may be, but there may be people out there that could, you know, are meaning to do them harm. So understanding those types of things is very important. And I understand that it's very difficult to keep up to speed and up to date on the apps and sites that kids are on because they're changing constantly. But, you know, if we have those open and honest conversations with our kids regularly, you know, as those apps change, their actions won't. So having them make smarter decisions, whether they're on, you know, Facebook or if they're on Twitter or their Instagram or they're on Kick or whatever they're using, they'll be able to use those same skills.
Is it always necessarily apps or something, or is it still very often texting? I mean, when I had teenage kids in the house, they were just texting constantly.
Well, I think kids text constantly, but how they're doing it is different. So a lot of kids, because there are so many messaging apps, will have kind of foregone the texting features that are built into the phone and are now using messaging apps like Kick or Snapchat to communicate with their friends, largely because it's easier to talk to multiple people at the same time. It doesn't really matter what kind of phone you have. So it just makes it easier, and it's also free. So if there's a messaging plan that you may have on your phone that limits you, messaging apps really don't have any limit. So kids are flocking to that just because it's easier to use. Unfortunately, it's also a way that we've seen predators are starting to communicate with children because it's just like any other social media site. And so when you are meeting friends or making friends on these messaging apps, you know, you probably don't know them. So it's just really important that we don't forget about the messaging sites, just as we haven't forgotten about Twitter or Instagram.
So the messaging sites, since they don't require a phone number, can be a bit more free form, I'm sure, that people can get in there and you don't know who they are.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think we've kind of gone backwards a little bit when it comes to these messaging apps because, you know, with Facebook and Twitter and even Instagram, you're sort of required to use your real name. And so that, you know, offered a level of security for most people. But now with messaging apps, we've kind of gone back to the AOL instant messaging days where we are using screen names. And that screen name could be anything and it could be anyone. So it's actually adding more of that anonymity back into the mix. And I think that's not something that we expected to see again, but it's definitely arisen, and so we have to be very mindful of that.
Some of the things that Morgan is going to be warning about tonight, some of these terms already, sexting, for example, and is the issue just try to get the message across to kids, don't send pictures of yourself to other people?
Wouldn't that be great? That's all that we had to do. it's so easy. Almost every phone or every device has photo capability. And you know, kids are kids. They're exploring. You know, at 15, 16 years old, you are exploring your sexuality. And you know, phones and tablets give you a great way to do that. Unfortunately, you know, the types of images and types of videos that kids are sending can be damaging. And so again, we want to make sure that kids are thinking before they post, before they send images. It's really a good rule of thumb not to send anything that you wouldn't want your mother or your grandmother to see. And, you know, we want to make sure that kids aren't doing that, but we understand that they may. We certainly don't condone it, but we do want to make sure that if it's out there, and that becomes a problem as it's been circulating. And images can do that really quickly. You can take a photo, and it can be to your whole school, your whole community, the whole state, and beyond within a matter of moments. So really having children understand how quickly information can spread, and that, you know, you don't want that information out. You might want to be sending something to your boyfriend or your girlfriend, and you think it's cute, but, you know, that's boyfriends and girlfriends, particularly in high school, don't really manage to stay around that long. And so a picture is forever.
Right. So, yeah, everything is forever, even if you think it's short term. Sextortion. Yeah. We have just a little less than a minute left here. What is sextortion?
Sextortion is exactly what it sounds like, extorting people for either images or sexual favors or videos. And we're seeing quite a lot about that in the last couple of years, actually, where people will solicit images or videos and then use videos and images to get more images and videos from children or to actually have sex with them, to meet them, to have sex. And so what we found is that kids kind of get wrapped up and they don't think that they can get help. But you do. You have a way out, and just don't try to handle it yourself.
Lots of warnings to be delivered tonight at the Medford Public Library, 5:30 to 7 at the large conference room. Morgan Davison from National Center for Missing and Exploited Children will be there. Jerise Colon is also with the National Center and is the Executive Director of Outreach. Jerise, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
All right, good to have you. That'll do it for this hour of the Exchange. We'll reconnect with Sean Usher in hour number 2 and learn about Letters of Note 2.